Hi everyone, welcome to Tyndall Talks, the Tyndall Center's official podcast. I'm Renee from the Tyndall Center at the University of East Anglia. Our episode today is about faith and climate action. Many faith leaders have signified their commitments to climate action. For example, Pope Francis of the Catholic Church penned the Laudato Si, depicting consumerism and irresponsible development, and calls on people for swift and unified global action. The Pope has also committed to net zero by 2050. On the other hand, the Church of England has also committed to net zero by 2030. Their plan includes reducing emissions from cathedrals, churches, dioceses, and schools. Rowan Williamson, when he was the Archbishop of Canterbury, launched the second phase of the Tyndall Center back in 2006, speaking to us about how climate change is a moral issue. According to World Vision, faith has great potential in addressing the climate emergency. And according to Pew Research Center, 84% of the world's population, or 8 out of 10 people, identify with a religious group. This is an opportunity for religions to transform their communities in different ways to help in climate action. And today we have Chris Walsh from the University of Manchester and Rachel Sorby from the Church of England to talk to us more about the role of faith and religion in climate action. Chris has been at the Tyndall Center in Manchester for 6 years, working on a variety of projects. His work with churches began with the UK Climate Resilience Programme, working as an embedded researcher in the Church of England cathedrals and church buildings, co-producing climate resilience guidance for churches across the country. He has also since worked with Salford Catholic Diocese and the Guardians of Creation Group to create a decarbonization guide for places of worship. For him, climate action is a key part of his faith, and a lot of his research interests and work stem from that. Rachel is an affiliate researcher with the Tyndall Center for Climate Change Research as part of her role as the Bishop's Environmental Research Officer for the Bishop of Norwich, Graham Usher. Bishop Graham is the lead bishop for environment for the Church of England. Rachel holds an MSc in Environmental Science from the University of East Anglia. Her areas of interest include behavior change, carbon reduction, and fuel poverty. She currently aids the environmental work of the church, including the pathway to net zero, biodiversity, particularly on church land, and engaging with the wider public on climate-related issues. So, hi, Chris and Rachel, and welcome to the Tyndall Talks.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Hi, thank you for having us on.
Yes, it's really great to have you too. I mean, you both sound like you've worked a lot with churches and faith groups, and it's a really interesting take on climate action. I mean, personally, I grew up in a very Catholic family. So, you know, knowing that how much the church has influence on people of faith, it's interesting to see what they're doing on climate change. So to start off, why is the faith sector important when it comes to tackling climate change, you know, in terms of both mitigation and adaptation? And I guess specifically for Rachel, since you're currently now working with the Bishop of Norwich, why is this important for the Church of England?
I'm happy to start off with that one. So we do see it as a kind of a fundamental part of expressing our faith is safeguarding and looking after the gift of creation that we've been given. And it's something that you see at the very start of scripture in the book of Genesis, where man is put in the Garden of Eden to cultivate the land, and God looks at creation, sees that it's good. And it's embedded all throughout scripture, all the way to the very end of the Bible, or in the book of Revelation. There's a lovely quote, "The leaves of the trees are for the healing of the nations." So it's really, we see it as a fundamental part of our faith. And then we also see the importance of climate justice. We're very aware that it's often the people that are contributing the least to climate change that are being impacted the most. And again, we're called to carry out the biblical call for justice. There's a really nice quote from Isaiah, which I like, which is the call to learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. And I think combating climate change is how we express that.
Thanks, Rachel. Those are really good quotes from the Bible. And what about Chris? I mean, you've also worked now with the Catholic church, and you said that, you know, faith also plays an important role in your work. So why do you think the faith sector is important?
Well, there's, in a really practical sense, lots of buildings in the UK and lots of land in the UK is managed by faith groups or organisations representing those faith groups. There's a really practical element of this as well. On the kind of faith side, stewardship, as Rachel was saying, is key in nearly all major religions. And that desire to look after our planet is a kind of key outworking of how an awful lot of people of faith view the world. And so it's a really important issue there. In this country, for instance, the Church of England, as one organisation, owns and controls many schools and big buildings that have really big mitigation potential. So actually, there's a lot of room within organisations which also have that kind of momentum generated among the people who use them as well, potentially, to make some real change.
Thank you. I actually didn't know about this fact that churches own a lot of land in England or the UK. I mean, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. Churches are quite rich. So, and saying that, though, I mean, if you have a lot of land, obviously you also, and you know, you own a lot of buildings, you would also have a lot of emissions, but also there would be a lot of climate change impacts that you need to, I guess, look out for and adapt to. So just as a follow-up question for this, do we have data on the emissions of churches? And, you know, what are the actual risks that climate change poses to these churches and lands?
I could talk a little bit about the risks. I guess that was the area that I worked most on within the Church of England. And also, I guess, touch a little bit on the emissions, and then Rachel might want to follow that up. But the vast majority of churches in the UK, at least how I understand it, have relatively little emissions if within each individual church. It's the larger buildings that can contribute a huge amount more. And also an awful lot of those buildings are heritage buildings and quite hard to protect, and important buildings and things we want to value in our society. So they're the kind of buildings that we look to protect anyway. So when we're thinking about protecting them, we already know that we've locked in a certain amount of climate change within the system. We can see it in the kind of the increase in extreme weather events that we've had, the increase in flooding events, the changes in the patterns of those events as well. Also just the changing in temperatures. And that impacts old buildings at the same rate it impacts new buildings, but those old buildings aren't built with those ideas in mind, particularly buildings that were built hundreds of years ago. So it's a really careful balance we have to take with those buildings in terms of protecting them. And you mentioned money as well. And the reality of a lot of churches within the UK is actually there isn't a lot of money to do any of this. So it's about taking what you've got and the resource you can and maximising those as much as you can as well.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything that Chris is saying. Just to go back to that point on the emissions that individual churches have, as you say, it does vary. So we have, you know, some churches that may be open once a week on a Sunday morning, and so their emissions are very low. Or we may have a festival church that only opens, you know, on the big days, versus a larger church that might be opening, have two or three services on a Sunday and something midweek, and they're using the hall and they're going to have much larger emissions. And we do have a energy footprinting tool. So we ask all our churches to fill that in every year, and then that gets reported on. But it's a 2-year reporting lag, like quite a lot of these things. So the last data that we have is from the end of 2022, looking back at 2021. But we do ask all of our churches to fill that in so that they've got a baseline work, and also we can track it as a national body.
That's good to know. And so in terms of, I'm really curious about this, you know, about the process of decision making as well, like within the churches. So can you possibly describe the process of decision making on how churches act on climate? So, for example, right, the Pope has written an encyclical, and recently he's, you know, again, written some really strongly worded critique on COP28, right? But in terms of local climate action, who actually decides what to do? Like, is it, you know, the bishop, or maybe is it the priest locally? And, you know, similarly with the Church of England, does each church or parish decide on which actions to take? And maybe also as a follow-up, sorry, I have too many questions, don't I? But how do I guess, you know, the people of faith going into this church, do they have a say on these actions or decisions?
So I will try my best to explain the interesting structure of the Church of England. So it all stems from this decision that we made in 2020 to set our 2030 net zero target. And that was a motion that was brought to General Synod. And General Synod is the governing body of the Church of England. And it has representation. It has all the bishops, and it has representation from clergy and also from laity, from non-clergy as well. So after that decision was taken, that was essentially the governing body saying to parishes, saying to cathedrals, to schools, to educational institutions, this is what we want to do, this is what we want you to work on. And then we also asked each diocese individually to take that motion, to debate it, and to set out their own plan. But then, you know, it's up to individual churches, really, how do they implement that? Does that look like they're having to make changes to their building, or changes to lifestyle, or, you know, introducing it more into their preaching? So individual decisions are up to each parish. But I did just want to shout out, within each diocese, we have a role called a diocesan environmental officer. And that's someone whose role is to basically promote the net zero program and to promote the individual churches. And they're absolutely amazing. They are so passionate and they work so hard on this. And they really, within their diocese, they just do an amazing job of linking different churches together and giving people ideas and helping them, you know, with improving their building and putting them in touch with amazing people. So they're great.
Yeah, as Rachel says, it so often is about the individual churches and the individual volunteers there. And like a lot of kind of voluntary organisations, that burden can become really, really big really quickly. And so adding climate change to that is another thing that a lot of people have to do. Particularly when we were doing our research into lots of different places of worship, we found that the... So as Rachel was saying, so often like the burden of these things ends up being on little individual churches and on the volunteers that already do a lot for those churches. Lots of churches have people who volunteer to clean, who volunteer to welcome people, volunteer to do tea and cake after, volunteer to look after the graveyard. And in asking another thing, often that's really, really difficult. So we need to be kind of sensitive with how we're doing this in terms of the kind of additional workload we're giving to people, the additional workload we might be giving to clergy in the Church of England, for example, who already have way too much work for a regular 9-to-5, or in other faith groups, people who are already working their socks off at a job and then coming home to volunteer at the place that they worship. So we just need to be respectful of what we're then asking people to do as well. And it's a really tough ask for some people.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, coming from the Philippines, where the Catholic Church is very much active and a lot of people identify as Catholics, I would say, for example, I don't know, like 90% of people who go to my parish church in the Philippines would volunteer for something. Although I'm not sure now, like, how they volunteer for climate, but, you know, they're like super active and want to be involved in something that the church does. So I think that's a very important point. And in terms of, I guess, concrete examples of how churches or religions are responding to tackling climate change, I mean, could you specifically in your work, and I know we've already mentioned some of the work, for example, you know, pathways to net zero, biodiversity, but can you tell us more about, you know, the work that you do and the work that the churches you've worked for do?
Sure, shall I? Well, I'll talk about a different place of worship, I guess. Colchoy Synagogue in London put together an environmental group, which they were involved in a big retrofit project on their synagogue there, which then with this green group that they created in the congregation, they were able to add things to the design as they were going. So they added solar, and they were able to retrofit installations and put in a new heating system. And it was thinking about the really kind of practical things as they were already in that process of rebuilding and refitting their church, having a group whose prime role was to think about, actually, this is how we could do it from a mitigation point of view, was really important, and came out of the congregation there as well. So it was one of those examples where you can really see the power of a couple of people getting together and really helping to drive change within a church building project.
So as part of the Dreamland, we encourage all our churches to sign something called Eco Church, which is like a very holistic approach, and it covers engagement and buildings and land and preaching and all of that to make your church eco. So where I worship, we've used kind of that checklist, and we basically went through and said, okay, we do this, we don't do this, you know, let's start doing this. So that's kind of what we've done. And then I also did briefly want to mention, so the church commissioners who manage the basically investment fund for the Church of England. Bishop Graham sits on the Church Commissioners, and this year they announced that the Church of England investment fund and the pension board is fully divesting from fossil fuel companies, from oil and gas companies. So that's quite a big shift that we decided to take to move entirely out of that sector, because we felt they weren't aligning enough with the Paris Agreement to feel comfortable continuing to invest in them.
Thanks. I think those are very good examples. I mean, from investments to structural changes, etc. Obviously, these churches are doing a lot of different, you know, tackling climate change in different ways. And that's really good to know. And I guess my question would now be, you know, for the congregation, the people of faith, and I don't know if you have, you know, you have the data or like the feedback, but would you have an idea of how they perceive the church's involvement, you know, in climate action? Is it positive? How are they engaging themselves? I mean, Chris talked about earlier about volunteering, but do we have any idea, like, are people actually engaged in climate action?
I think I'm a little biased being someone that is engaged in climate action. Obviously, that tends to be people that I speak to. I think it is this starting to get very embedded actually into people's lives. But I also think the way that it's embedded sometimes in church communities is not necessarily as climate action, but just as getting involved with nature, which I think a lot of people really appreciate. So they may do like a wild church, or they open up their churchyards one Sunday and people come and, you know, learn about that, and they're helping the wildflowers and, you know, the bees and the butterflies. And actually congregations, I think, really respond to that and really like that. And even if they might not necessarily thinking, oh, that's climate action, we're tackling climate change at the church, but they're still responding to it and they're still enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I'm the same in terms of my kind of bias towards this as a person of faith who works in environmental stuff. I think there is a keenness for it. I think as well, there's a keenness for knowing what it can do for a church. Like, if you're trying to communicate with young people particularly, you need to be engaged with this kind of thing, especially if you're a big organization, because otherwise people are going to turn around and say, look what you're preaching, you're not walking the walk. So it's really important that churches do it and to lead on it as well. I think there's a real role for voluntary organisations and big kind of charity organisations to lead on this, where industry and business hasn't yet been leading us very well. I think when the Synod made their net zero and the subsequent pathway has actually been quite influential. In terms of divestment, you can see the Methodist Church did that very, very early. And then there's kind of been following them. There have been people, other organizations thinking, actually, that divestment, that's where we need to head. I think a lot of faith groups can offer a real kind of, there's a real social capital to the action within them that I think has a really wide impact. I also think that churches are uniquely, place of worship are uniquely placed to meet a lot of kind of climate needs that are going to come in terms of when we're thinking about adaptation and we're thinking about the risks that are going to be affecting people. Churches are ideal, what I would call resilience hubs for a lot of places. They're in every tiny village, right? There's a church and a pub. They're often on high ground, so they're relatively flood resistant. They have these big open spaces that you can use, that you can put people in, or you can put things in. And they have permanent staff often, at least permanent staff somewhere near them usually. So there's a real, I think as well, that desire for the church to go out is should also be met by hopefully an enthusiasm to come in with it as well. And I think churches would be very up for that.
I just wanted to build on Chris's point about them being resilience hubs and say that last year in the July heatwave, there was a church in Manchester that operated as a cool church, and they had their doors open and said, if you are overheated and you can't cool down, come in, because we're way cooler than the surrounding temperature because of the fact it's an old building and that's how it's been built.
Yeah, and people used them. Like, so when I went and visited that church, I found out about it because they were on Five Live. Like, people hear about that. And it's a really cool thing to get involved in for the church, to get people in and get people to see and talk to as well. I think it works both ways. It's a really great opportunity from an evangelistic point of view for the church, but also from thinking about the most vulnerable in our society. So I saw like churches who opened, who deliberately went and knocked on the doors of people who they knew might be at risk, so the elderly, and asked, do you want to come? We've got a space for you. And I think that's really important, and is only going to get more important, unfortunately, as we go on.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting because, you know, in the Philippines, it's the same. Churches are used actually because in the Philippines, you know, we have a lot of typhoons particularly and flooding because a lot of it is coastal areas. And churches are always open for evacuations, you know, like if people needed to evacuate, churches would be open to say, come over, like stay here until the floods have gone or something like this. And it's interesting to see that, you know, it's not only in the Philippines, but it's also happening, for example, you know, in the UK. And just a follow-up, follow-up on this, actually. And, you know, we've touched on this a bit when you answered this question. Do you think the church being involved in environment and, you know, climate action makes them more, I guess, have a more progressive stand or make them more relevant to current times? Because there is this fear, I know, for the Catholic Church that, you know, they feel like maybe they are too traditional and no longer relevant, and you know, being involved in such causes would make them relevant, as you said, Chris, especially to young people.
I think from my point of view, it's not necessarily about relevance. I think for a lot of people in the church, that's always been their mission. It's not been a changing thing. It's not people seeing like this is what we need to do. I think for a lot of people, they've been hyper aware. I mean, if you look back at the history of all kinds of progressive movements, you find people of faith right at the center of them across the world. And I think that as we move into this time, this is becoming the pressing issue. You see, as you say, the Pope and the Laudato Si paper that he did. I think because it's a pressing issue, the church is in a place to respond. And I think that's so, I think it's so important for the church to respond as an outworking of their faith. Not because it's the cool thing to do, but because that's what they believe they're called to do, which I think they are.
So I mean, I think it's really important for the church to be being involved in climate action. One, because I do think it is a fundamental way to express our faith. But also, I think a lot of people look at the church and say, why aren't you getting involved? Why aren't you speaking about this? I think the church also has a opportunity to act as spiritual support and as spiritual leaders for people that might be suffering from climate anxiety and are very concerned about the future. And actually the church can speak into that and say, we have hope for the future. We are doing work. You know, this is not going to be the end necessarily.
Thank you. And I guess I always end every episode with a little bit of tips, I guess, for our audience. We have a lot of listeners who ask, you know, but what can I do? And in terms of this episode, you know, if we have listeners who are people of faith, you know, from the Church of England, the Catholic Church, and maybe even, you know, other faiths. How can they get involved in their church's efforts on climate change?
So I guess my cheap plug is to go and look at our decarbonisation guide that we did. It's available on the Guardians of Creation. It's called Environmental Stewardship for Places of Worship. I'll go and look at that. Hopefully it's helpful. It's we designed it to be as easy to follow as possible. So it's a load of kind of flow charts where you can try and figure out what might be a good action for you in your church or your place of worship to take, as well as a few encouraging stories as well from different places that have tried to make change and worked out how to do. Because there are loads of actions open to you, and not all of them are a full retrofit for insulation or solar panels on the roof. There's lots more things that you could be working towards or engaging in. Like Rachel mentioned, the Eco Church scheme, there's bronze, so there's tiers to it, you know? So actually getting on that bronze tier is really, really important. And then you can go from there and you can work out what's next. So I definitely say of that. And I guess the other thing I would say to do is pray. As a Christian who believes in the power of prayer, I think that that's something that is vital for Christians to be doing about our climate and about our leadership as well, that they would take it seriously and make the changes that we need to make.
Yeah, I think the Eco Church website is an amazing place to start because it's got so many resources. I would say just ask around, you know, on a Sunday and say, is anyone else interested in this? There may be people that are already doing things that you can link up with. You know, talk to your vicars and say, maybe, you know, on a Sunday we could include a prayer for the environment, or we could find some hymns that are, you know, about the environment and just raise that spiritual awareness, I think.
And just to add as well, lots of other kind of denominations or religions have their equivalent of Eco Church. So there's like Eco Synagogue. I'm trying to remember what they're all called, but there's, if you look it up, there's plenty of kind of certification schemes for different organizations.
Well, thank you. That was a very, I guess, insightful on what the churches are doing at the moment. And thank you for joining us today, Chris and Rachel. I also hope our listeners learn more about how different faith sectors are involved in climate action, and if they want to volunteer or do something with their church, make sure to ask around, ask other people in the church, ask the priest or the bishop on what you can do. Churches are always open for ideas, especially now that we know that they're really wanting to take on climate action as well. So thanks for listening to us today, and we hope to see you in our next episode of The Tindle Talks.